We're continuing to follow Hurricane Ian today. Citing that storm, the House committee investigating the attack on the Capitol January 6th postponed its hearing scheduled for today. That hearing was the last one on the calendar, and as we wait for it to be rescheduled, let's take stock of what the committee has already learned and where its investigation may go. The committee is preparing a final report and could send recommendations to the Justice Department to follow up from there. Let's talk now to Kimberly Whaley, visiting professor of law at American University and former assistant U.S. attorney. Kimberly, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So the political clock is ticking. We're 6 weeks out from the midterm, 6 weeks from yesterday, and there's a reasonable chance the Republicans could take over the House. So what do you imagine the committee is trying to establish and do before then?
Well, this election, this midterm election, of course, will decide whether the committee will continue to exist. And presumably, if the Republicans take over the House, it will stop. And investigations will shift to Democrats, potentially even impeachment of Joe Biden himself. So the committee has a few things to do. Number one is to produce a public record for the history books and to sort of raise the American consciousness around the coup attempt. And just to be clear, let's define. A coup is a sudden, violent, illegal seizure of power from a legitimate government. Very serious. So it's kind of telling the story, maybe getting people to vote. Number two, it would be a potential referral to the Department of Justice, written referral in a report for charges that would go beyond the 800-plus people on the ground who now have already been embroiled into the criminal justice system, maybe up to the very top echelons of the White House. And then the third would be to justify legislation to prevent this kind of thing from happening in the future. The House passed changes, important changes, I believe, to the Electoral Count Act as well, I should say, and we're waiting to see if that makes it through the Senate. Of course, if the power shifts, then there won't be any legislative changes, which is unfortunate because we saw a lot post-Watergate after the last crisis of epic proportions, not as serious as this, and we just haven't seen it with the Democrats at post January 6th so far.
Well, let's listen back to some key moments so far in the committee. Over the summer, we heard Pat Cipollone, then White House lawyer for then President Trump, talking about voting machines. Let's take a listen.
To have the federal government seize voting machines, that's a terrible idea for the country. That's not how we do things in the United States. There's no legal authority to do that.
The committee hearings also revealed inside conversations about Vice President Pence potentially undoing the results of the vote, bringing in fake electors. What is the committee trying to do here, to message something to the American public or perhaps the Justice Department?
Right. So I like to think about the story as almost a play in three acts. Act one would be the planning of taking the election. Act two would be the actual day of January 6th. And then act three is the cover up and reframing of it as the big lie. And I think the committee's done a good job going through all three parts of that. And of course, we only know a tiny, tiny fraction of it. But just to be clear, you know, they've established, I think, that this was not a sort of unanticipated event. This wasn't just a rowdy crowd getting excited unexpectedly. This was premeditated in that, you know, the defeated president spent 8 weeks orchestrating an attempt to overturn the election results, starting with court challenges, and then invoking Attorney John Eastman's plan to persuade Mike Pence to ignore his obligation under the Constitution to just, you know, gavel in the votes, to meeting with members of Congress to try to get them to reject election results, to trying to get fake electors, slates of electors, to then ultimately, you know, going down to the Capitol and making a speech saying, you know, I'll be there with you. And I'll walk down to the Capitol.
And legally, why does premeditated matter?
Well, you know, premeditated is, of course, a criminal term, and I'm not identifying any particular particular crime. But of course, we do know there are already allegations of attempting, obstructing an official proceeding. There, you know, people have been charged with that crime, inciting a riot, inciting an insurrection, maybe even seditious conspiracy. There are a whole range of criminal statutes that I think, as Liz Cheney has indicated, at least some of which would fairly apply based on just the public evidence to the president. I mean, just to be clear, it's illegal to vote fraudulently as a single individual in an election. It's certainly illegal to try to thwart the entire outcome. That's just a matter of logic. And so the question really comes down to whether there's an appetite in the Justice Department and the Biden administration to take steps to actually indict people at the top for this.
Mm-hmm. And Liz Cheney, you mentioned we should mention that as co-chair of this committee, she lost her primary, so she won't be returning to Congress in January. I want to ask you about the Vice President Pence, then Vice President Pence. The committee heard chilling tape from January 6th from the vice president's security detail, fearing for their lives. And we should note that the voice we're going to hear was altered for personal protection.
It was disturbing. I don't like talking about it, but there were calls to say goodbye to family members, so on and so forth. It was getting, for whatever the reason was on the ground, the VP detail thought that this was about to get very ugly.
We heard a lot in these hearings about the fear, the human toll, these remarkable close calls for lawmakers and the vice president. What do you make of that focus of the committee?
Well, that sort of is, I think, intended to wake people up to how serious it is. Of course, U.S. Capitol Police Officer Carolyn Edwards opened the hearings, saying it was a war scene, it was carnage, chaos. She was slipping in people's blood. More than 100 officers were injured. 9 people died in the attack or afterwards. And then there are people like Mike Pence who, you know, and we know when Nancy Pelosi, others, they were calling for their execution. We were a hair's breadth away from that. And then there were lower level officials within the election apparatus. Election workers Shea Moss and Ruby Freeman talked about how hard it was that the president publicly and falsely accused them of fraud, that they've feared for their lives. We heard from people like Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger or Arizona Speaker Rusty Bowers, that kind of adhered to the fidelity to the rule of law and have paid the price in terms of political pushback and, for some of them, real, you know, serious death threats. And they're ongoing. I mean, it's become now a liability in America for regular people to volunteer to do the sacred act of making our elections work. And those thousands of people are heroes. They made it work, a safe election in a pandemic. They are not people that are interested in fraud. And I think that's a story that we forget.
Okay. And I want to ask about then-President Trump in these hearings. We heard about him purportedly watching this all unfold on television, that he did not call for law enforcement backup. We learned that he demanded to be taken to the Capitol until his Secret Service officers said no. What substantive argument do you think the committee is trying to make with this focus on Trump?
Well, this is, Liz Cheney has referred to this as dereliction of duty, which is not a crime. I mean, it would be potentially impeachable, but within 15 minutes of leaving the stage, he knew the Capitol was besieged and under attack. Cassidy Hutchinson, aide to Mark Meadows, testified that he was told that there was potential firearms, and he said, "I don't care," I'm paraphrasing, that people have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. And so I think the idea is, not only did Donald Trump sort of knowingly call them to call the mob there, but encouraged potentially limitations and wanted to get rid of the metal detectors to encourage the violence. And for 3 hours, I mean, I live right outside Washington, D.C. I remember watching the TV saying, where is law enforcement? But just sat on his hands and didn't do anything to protect the integrity of the election and the human beings that were involved.
Great. Well, we have to go. We will potentially bring you back to talk about what happens next. Of course, there are witnesses and interviews going forward. Kimberly Whaley is visiting law professor at American University, the Washington College of Law there. Kimberly, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.